Hello and welcome to CIFAR Sounding. I'm your host, Simba Wiltz.
And I'm Asla Gonser.
CIFAR Sounding is a production of Central Florida Animal Reserve,
where we engage the world of the big cats through our mottos of compassion, conservation, and commitment.
At CIFAR, when it comes to big cats, it's about vision.
You can find out more about us on our website at cflar.org.
We're also on social media. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/cflar and on Twitter at cflarbigcats.
We also have a YouTube channel at youtube.com/CFL Animal Reserve.
This week, we continue our discussion on big cats by talking about their senses and how our knowledge of them can help make us better handlers.
So a little bit of the visual stuff we've talked about then is not only taking away their vision of something by putting up barricades, but also by exposing them to certain things so that they become accustomed to them visually and manipulating their behavior in that way. So what about hearing? What's the acuity of the hearing of the big cats?
Well, very acute, actually. They can hear sounds that are very close to the same low range as humans, but remarkably higher range. And this is really interesting physiology. The ear is actually a tunnel, it's a tube, and it wraps around itself into the ear canal. And as this ear canal narrows, there are little hairs that are in there that move with the vibration of sound. And because tigers not only have a large ear, but also have the ability to direct the sound using their ears, their pinnae that are on top of their head, they are able to hear sounds that are in a much higher range than humans, and even higher range than dogs. This is accomplished by having just such a large tube that it can get down into really small, narrow passages, and they'll pick up those higher notes. Now, in terms of influencing sound, because their range is so much greater than ours, we really don't have much of a chance of knowing all of the sounds that they hear, because their auditory world is just completely different than ours. The range, you know, if we're talking about a cat being able to hear somewhere in the range of 55 to 65 kilohertz, where most humans will stop at around the 20 kilohertz range, the sounds that they can hear must be incredible.
But now, is that true of all the big cats or just the tigers?
Generally accepted to be true for all the big cats. And I say generally accepted because even the practice of being able to establish whether or not a cat can or can't hear a sound at a range is also an interesting experiment. In order to establish these ranges for all of these animals, what they had to do was to train an animal to eat out of a specific bowl when a tone is played over that bowl. And it's only considered a positive hit if the animal chooses the right bowl. So there'll be two bowls, they'll make a sound over one, and then the animal will turn to eat out of that one, but they will not eat unless they hear the sound. So they play those sounds at the different frequencies, and at the point when they play a frequency and the animal does not react, they assume that they can't hear that sound range.
So as that tone changes in frequency, the cat is still influenced by the fact that there is a tone coming from this bowl and not the other.
Right.
Okay.
So that eliminates the fact that they just randomly started eating something out of a bowl.
So that's an interesting way to test sound acuity. I like that.
It's simple, it's elegant, and this test has been successful in determining the sound acuity of lots of different creatures, not just cats.
But not people, because they don't let us eat ice cream or something like that. They make us pick up our fingers and we put the headphones on and say left, right.
Pretty much.
Yeah, it's okay. So knowing that their acuity is much better than ours, in, at least in the higher ranges, what about in the lower ranges? Do they hear the similar kinds of ways that we do in lower ranges?
According to the sound tests, the answer is yes. However, there are some mitigating factors that may also imply that they can respond to them even if they really can't hear them. As you know, that once you start getting to these lower registers, the amplitude of these lower registers can actually register as a feel.
Yes.
And cats have extremely sensitive whiskers, for example. These whiskers may actually be able to pick up some of these lower sounds, and they might react to the amplitude of the sound without actually hearing the noise. Because for an integrated sense system, there's not necessarily a reason why they need to differentiate between I heard it and I felt it. It's going to be a reaction.
And of course, low tones, if you've ever gone out to watch a shuttle launch or one of the rocket launches, some of those low tones, you can feel your shirt moving with those low tones. Even if you can't hear that sound, you can feel it. And that's what you're talking about in this case with the whiskers moving, for example.
Or four very sensitive paws on the ground, being able to feel the vibrations through the ground.
So is there any way you can use their sense of hearing as part of your influence of their choice?
Well, one of the most obvious is getting them used to the sound of our voice. That really takes kind of two different parts to it. One is being able to have appropriate tone with them to have them recognize when your voice is reflecting seriousness versus reflecting calm or comfort or welcoming, sometimes even warning, making sure that they can recognize a warning tone. The nuances of how well they key upon our vocal emotional state is probably a realm that would be better suited to the continuing study of anthrozoology, because it does really reflect the interaction between the person and the animal. Additionally, there is a certain amount of sound dissonance that needs to be maintained as well. That can be sometimes as simple as exposing the cats to music, exposing the cats to what it sounds like for an everyday workday, having tools and hammering and making those kinds of noises. Interestingly enough, there is certainly enough evidence that suggests that sound can end up being a major stressor for cats, especially in those registers that we may not be recognizing. If cats are kept near industrial areas, for example, or near a lot of oscillating equipment, sometimes those pieces of equipment will be producing very, very strong, high amplitude noises that are going to be in those upper ranges where people may not be able to hear it, but could be driving the cats absolutely crazy. Because we're not hearing it, we may not be recognizing that they are under the influence of this static. I don't know what it would be called. It's not white noise, it's not pink noise, it's, you know, what, stripe noise or something.
Stripe for the tigers, of course.
Yeah, stripe for the tigers noise, you know, fuzzy noise, something
yes.
that they're hearing on this constant basis that could be quite annoying to them and actually be drowning out even just normal vocal commands.
And that could obviously be a bad outcome in many cases.
Making sure that you have a good grip on what other sounds are around is going to be important.
About visual acuity and a little bit about the hearing acuity. What about taste? Do we have any information about how their sense of taste is?
Well, we know that cats, and this goes for little cats too, they don't have any sweet receptors. They can't taste sweet.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't know that.
To a certain degree, that makes some sense. Most sweet tastes come from long-chain carbohydrates. That's what a sugar is, essentially. And most carbohydrate sources are going to be plant material. And since cats are obligate carnivores, there's not much of an evolutionary reason for them to be connoisseurs of the sweet taste. However, sour is often associated with free hydrogen ions, which are parts of poisons. Bitter is oftentimes ringed aromatic compounds. And ringed aromatic compounds certainly have certain organic properties that can be poisonous or dangerous. And of course, salty. Salty is useful for all creatures that have kidneys because we need to regulate our salt intake, and being able to gravitate towards that is going to be important. So there's that evolutionary advantage does somewhat play to our advantage, but we know that they have very sensitive palates, and the cats are oftentimes willing to experiment in spite of not being able to taste sweet. We have seen cats that have shown interest in ice cream. It may not be the ice cream itself, the sweetness like perhaps we enjoy, but the mere fact that it's got a cold sensation.
Yeah, the texture itself may be interesting.
And for texture itself, they like that. Sometimes they will lick the side of their den, feeling the texture of that wood, or they might lick a pole or something along those lines if it's smooth. They do enjoy a certain amount of oral stimulus. For us as handlers, sometimes it's also getting used to our taste, so to speak. And that sounds kind of funny, but when you think about it, it's kind of important that they recognize that if they taste this, that it's got a positive non-food connotation.
Right. So they're licking your hands, for example, and getting that taste.
Yes. Or, you know, and the combination of scent and taste are extremely important. You know, they do work together. So yes, the licking of the hands or the giving a little kiss here and there definitely gives them a chance to understand that, you know, that's us. And it adds to the sensory you-ness of each individual handler. Because if they're giving you a kiss, then usually you're also talking to them. Then they can also see you. So it becomes almost like a key card, whereby by tasting, that could be the last link in the key card, whereby they say, oh, it's you. The one who tastes, looks, smells, sounds like this.
Right. So those are the attributes they put to say, that is you.
Right.
But what about smell? We haven't talked about sense of smell.
Sense of smell. Fascinating sense. The sense of smell is one of the only senses that does not undergo processing before it heads to the brain. One of the cranial nerves, the olfactory nerve, goes straight from the nose into the brain and then is processed. So smell is one of the most powerful of all the senses, not just for cats, but also for humans, if you think about it. It's why scent therapy is being used increasingly as a means of helping people with memory problems.
Yeah, I've noticed that even in myself, that there are times when you get a whiff of something that will bring back a memory that you had forgotten, for example, but it pulls it out of those files and brings it right to the forefront because that scent of that memory comes into the foreground.
And what a better way to influence the unconscious than being able to access the brain directly? Now, unfortunately, we have a problem again.
Oh, yeah.
We have the same problem that we have with hearing. The cat's smell mechanisms, they're not that much different from our smell mechanisms. The way that the chemoreceptors work are going to be very similar to the way that human chemoreceptors work. However, we have this itty-bitty nose, which if you think about it is this itty-bitty net that is going to catch chemicals in the air, whereas they have this giant nasal passage that's built into the skull that is many, many, many more times the size of a human's. So what that means is not that they smell better than us. It's more that they smell in more fidelity. If we were smelling, it would be kind of like watching an old VHS tape. And what they're smelling is 4K TV.
That's a good way to explain it. So their fidelity of their scent that they're pulling out gives them a more clearer picture of what they're actually sensing than we get.
They're smelling better and in more detail for longer, because if you've ever encountered a smell that you've gotten used to, you know, it gets weaker over time, it's because the cells are saturated. They can't smell it anymore because all of the receptors have smelled what they're going to smell and the body says, okay, I'm done. But if you increase the number of those receptors, you'll be able to smell clearer for longer and catch less scent in order to have a reaction. Human beings are able to smell things that are in the parts per billion in the air. And, you know, very sensitive noses that we have. But since we have arbitrarily chosen to not live in a scent-rich environment where scent dictates information, except, of course, for food, that sometimes people ignore that. But when people who are fantastic smellers actually turn it on, you can find out that there's a lot of scent information that people have.
And obviously, scent and taste play together quite often. I know that if you're to plug your nose and eat something, there's the sensation that it tastes different.
Right.
Even though what it is that you're blocking off the smell of that taste.
Handling philosophy and the senses involved will continue in just a moment. You're listening to Zephyr Sounding. Talking about handling philosophy and the senses.
So those playing together, is there any way that you use scent and smell to influence the cats as well?
Well, we certainly use nose and mouth. That is definitely a technique that's been used. Generally speaking, the cats are going to smell something first before they try something, unless they are in attack mode and using their mouth as a tool. So a cat, generally speaking, unless they are determining that they're going to play, doesn't just walk up with its mouth open and bite you. You'll see that coming from a mile away. Many times they'll want to sniff first, and then they might mouth something. If they smell something and what they smell they don't like, they won't mouth it. And anybody who has been out there to try to give the cats medicine will know this, because you can take their favorite piece of meat, but if you put a pill in there that you broke or that there's some powder on the outside and they smell that, they are going to shut their mouth tight and walk in the other direction.
So they know it's in there.
They know something's in there, and that something doesn't smell like food.
That's amazing, actually. So that makes it more difficult for you to make that influence to get the right outcome of eating that medication.
Yes. Another linkage is sometimes using that against them. Cats do like to mouth on things, and in occasion, a handler might find that a cat has decided that it wants to mouth their arm, put their mouth around their forearm or something along those lines, in which case is not necessarily a means to panic. It's, most of the time, is just the cat giving you the equivalent of a handshake, except that, there's four three-inch canines there.
Right.
And depending on how eager they are, that handshake can become more or less aggressive very quickly. So one of the techniques that is used is taking a finger and sticking it very far up a nose, and that causes a release, an instinctive release.
That's interesting. So that's one way of using those senses to get the right outcome, is to cause an instinctive release. But so you're literally sticking a finger up their nose?
Yes. The further you go up, the more that they kind of reel back and open their mouth naturally.
That's interesting. Well, that sounds like a good technique to know if you're in the wild and a tiger happens to grab you by the arm.
If a tiger grabs you by the arm in the wild, then you're probably in a little bit more trouble.
Right. But sense of touch we haven't talked about. I think that's the only one we haven't really discussed at all.
No, we hadn't talked about touch, and touch is fascinating, as all of these senses are, because it's laden with meaning, and touch comes in so many different varieties. And there's some debate in terms of a cat's sensitivity to touch. They are such incredibly tough animals, and their sensitivity to touch is going to depend on where and how you touch them. There is, very light touch, which might be, a scratch on the bridge of the nose. There's heavy touch, in which case you may, pat very hard, like you're patting them on the shoulder or patting them on the chest. And then, of course, there's there's negative reinforcement touch, which can actually be a strike of some sort. And depending on how and where and when you do those things, you're going to elicit certain reactions. But touch comes in a lot of different flavors. There's light touch, of course, but the basic type of touch receptors are going to include things like hot and cold, pain receptors, which are free nerve ends that are in parts of the body, the ability to sense pressure, and the ability to sense damage.
Do you use sense of touch at all for influencing choices while you're doing behavioral handling?
Yes. Surprisingly, it actually can be quite effective if it's done effectively, especially subtle touch. Freedom, who has been working with people all her life, in fact, for most of her adult life, she actually used to be in an indoor cage because of some injuries that she had sustained that we didn't want to leave her outside. And so she got very used to walking with people. And so now, even when she is not on lead, for example, she will prefer that a person be standing in a very particular spot and will allow that person to guide her by gentle touches and taps on either side of her neck or on her shoulder. In other cases, cats, no matter if they're big or small, seem to obtain a lot of pleasure from touch, especially if you're scratching them behind an ear or scratching them on the head. You'll be able to tell that there's a fondness there because they will push harder up against the fence so that they can get an extra scratch here or there, close their eyes, and give a very soft rumble of happiness there.
And that's all about building the trust with them as well, because you're giving them some pleasure and they understand that it's you and that you're doing something nice to them.
Exactly. And we know that the touch, that they've got some processing to that touch. They have the tremendous ability to ignore pain, both internally as well as externally. I think about just the magnificent structure that is a cat's paw, for example, whereby, you know, they can chew on their paw or chew on each other's paw and you won't see a reaction. But then if you take a blade of grass and you just stick it right onto the hairs under the toes, then they'll suddenly pull back and, you know, flick the foot, and obviously they felt that.
So they have a ticklish sense.
Apparently so.
So we've talked about the senses and a little bit about how you may use them to influence choice. But still using all of that, the idea is, the concept is that you're trying to get the right outcomes to display the right behaviors. Because once they have displayed a behavior, it's too late at that point, right?
In many cases, especially in the instance of negative outcomes. But there are a number of null behaviors, in which case they may not be doing anything negative, but we're not communicating. They're not doing what it is that we're actually wanting for them to do.
So the null behavior is the choice to do nothing.
Maybe. Or they may not have gotten the stimulus at a level for which they recognize that they have to do something. For example, if someone walks over and whispers to the cat, you know, I need you to shift, they just may not have heard them.
Okay. So that's also another reaction or an outcome that may result. How do you use all these senses to be an effective handler?
Well, the first part is becoming aware of the senses yourself. We often say that working around big cats is a bit of a rebirth because you have to think about what you're doing in a different manner. To be an effective handler, you have to have enough mastery of your own senses, your own five senses, such that you can develop the sixth, which is a synthesis of all of the five senses that will enable you to communicate with the cats. So, for example, if I need the cats to shift, then that process starts before you walk up to that enclosure, because you have to recognize that you're going to stimulate them in a particular order. They may hear you first, they may smell you first, they may see you first. However, the actions that you take as you're moving through there should all be leading up to the fact that you need for them to shift. So perhaps instead of walking up in front of their enclosure, if you know this cat likes to greet you, you'll walk up by the shift door, which will automatically get the cat moving in that direction. Instead of greeting them with a soft hello, you might open the door and call them more fervently. Hey, come on over here. And because, especially for the initial stimulus, you're using all of these together to get the cat to do the behavior because they're going to be wanting to respond to the way that you've stimulated their senses for that particular activity.
And some of that involves taking away choices so that they make the right choice.
Exactly. If you, for example, and this has happened many times, where we have multiple volunteers on site and all of them are going to be part of working on one enclosure. So if you've got three separate people and they're on three sides of an enclosure and all of them call to the cat at the same time, then there's going to be confusion of action. The cat has to make a choice between which person they're going to go to, follow, lead, etc., which is why it's always been extremely important that if you're going to use a stimulus, that you use it in coordination with your teammates. If everybody is calling to the cat at the same time, then the cat doesn't know what to do. They just know that they're hearing noise, and it becomes noise dissonance. The cat will choose a null response instead of acting on it.
Okay.
So what you might do is you might say, okay, let me have all three of you come to one side of the enclosure and then have one person call as opposed to all three of them. And if that one person's call doesn't work, then you might say, okay, next person. Then you might say, next person. And you go down the line until you find a stimulus that's going to reach a level that the cat will actually respond to. But it's all from one direction.
That's all the time we have for this week. Next week, putting it all together, how this knowledge of the senses makes us better handlers, and how an integrated approach can benefit both working around cats as well as working around people. It's an episode that you won't want to miss.
C4 Sounding is a production of Central Florida Animal Reserve,
where we engage the world of big cats through our mottos of compassion, conservation, and commitment.
At CFAR, when it comes to big cats, it's about vision.
Send us your thoughts. You can get us on email via contact@cflar.org.
Tune in again next week for more discussion. My name is Asla Gonser.
And I'm Simba Wills. Thanks for listening to CFAR Sounding.